This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 117, sponsored by Jim Henley's Universe, the Netflix, and foodcomics.com, or so we heard.
You almost said around comics.
Last time I checked, this was still the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 117, and I'm still Ron.
I'm still Connor, apparently.
And I'm Josh, and you totally threw me off. You win this week. Ding, ding, ding. Those aren't the words I expected to hear.
So this here is a podcast from iFanboy.com, which is a website about comics where we read comics, and every week one of us picks our favorite comic, writes a little review of it on that website, iFanboy.com, and then we come here and talk about it, as well as the other books that came out every week. We just want to warn you before we start talking about the books, we might spoil some stuff. We're going to talk about what happened. So if you haven't read your comics, put them down. Press pause.
Put them down. Drop them.
Yeah, just stop reading comics. All right, just stop. read your comics. Come back. Listen to the podcast. You'll enjoy it that much better. And also, it was Josh's pick, so it's up to him.
This is a bad start. Fine. Omens are bad.
Okay. Speaking of omens. The pick this week was John Constantine, Hellblazer, number 240, written by Andy Diggle, and drawn by Leonardo Manco.
And defensively reviewed by Josh Klein.
I don't think that was the case. Although, I am surprised that A, anybody else is reading it, and B, it was kind of a weird week, because there was a lot of books I was looking forward to, but not a lot of books that I enjoyed. And I just think with a book like this, I wasn't being defensive, but as much as I was trying to convince people who don't read it that they should probably take a look at it. And one of the things that I said in my review is that this book is basically a superhero book. You know, he's got a uniform, he has powers, he's just extremely reluctant and sort of in self-denial. What you have is John Constantine, who sort of time and again has saved the Earth through, you know, magical rumblings and things from demons and evil sorcerers and stuff like that. But he just completely doesn't want to take himself or any of it seriously. And he's just like this complete anti-hero, but he still does the right thing every time it comes up. And one of the things that I think keeps people away from this book is that it's 240 issues in, which is that, I mean, is that 20 years? I mean,
yeah, 20 years.
So that's no small thing, and I think that scares away people. But one of the things that I realized as I was thinking about what to write about this is that, you know, there's not really a whole hell of a lot of continuity that you need to know. On most new arcs, you can pretty much pick it up and start reading. That's what I did, you know, and it was at like 150-something at the time. You know, it's actually a fairly accessible book. However, you have to kind of like the cultural British aphorisms and things in it.
You think so?
Yeah, I mean, especially now, Andy Diggle has really has put the Brit back into it. A lot of the dialogue is pretty heavy, and he's not giving a lot away to you. The first scene is basically John Constantine meets in a Chinese restaurant with a crooked cop, and like the dialogue is fairly thick with sort of working class UK, you know, Scouser, Cockney kind of accents. And I love that. I mean, I'm a big fan of that because it's you know, I'm sure if you're British, you're like, this sounds stupid, but you know, to me it's a really neat sort of way of speaking, and it's sort of sing-songy, and it really gives everything a character. And Andy Diggle, since he's been on this for the past, I don't even know how many issues, 6 months to a year, something like that, has just been every issue that's come out has been great. There's been like a 6-issue arc, and then like a single issue, and then you know, on and on like that for a while. And every time the new story starts is a perfect time to jump on. So this right here is a really good time to jump on.
What's this one about?
Basically, it's a little like Straczynski's Totem thing, where there's a demon, or he's not a demon, he's like a special, some other kind of demon with a different name, and what he does is he goes and he absorbs the power of mages and magicians. John Constantine is actually officially a mage, for those of you out there who are playing with DPS. and he's, of course, a threat to the whole world. And basically, this old, like, there's another mage who is, like, an old tribal dude in, you know, wearing only a loincloth in Africa. And he was killed by this demon, but the demon then subsumed all of his power and knowledge. But the shaman took a little bit of his knowledge and put it in a tree root, which he then smuggled to the UK. And so John Constantine gets a hold of the tree root and finds out that he is the laughing magician, who is a presence who has been forth ever since there was man, and so there's this long thing about how important he is to the scheme of everything, and he's the counterbalance to evil, and blah, 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 blah. And at the end of it, he just goes, oh, fuck off. You know, and he throws the two-finger salute up to the camera, basically. And it's just, it's his attitude. This book is really all about Constantine's attitude. And it's not unlike House, as like I said, because it's just like a really interesting character, and each story is just a problem that he's got to solve and get through. And the character itself is actually just interesting enough that you just want to watch it, even though the stories are not necessarily incredibly thrilling all the time. It's good enough.
These are the times where I wish we were all in the same room doing the podcast, because I wish you could see me stifling the laughter when you went through that whole what he is.
Well, no, this is the thing, though. But how is that any different than you're a mutant who has wings?
No, it's not. It's not. And what made me laugh and what's making me when you went through all that, I think my eyes might have broken their retinas from rolling back so much.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is that everything I know of Constantine as a character, as like this army Brit kind of thing, that's something I totally dig.
And you know, that's what I'm saying, but his attitude as a character is very similar to your attitude as a reader.
Right. Yeah, that's why I mean I'm laughing at the I don't know what the juxtaposition of that, of like this kind of, you know, basically this concept that he's somewhat immortal or like ever present in terms of the history of man, but it's manifested in this, you know, sarcastic, you know, brusque British guy.
You know, he used to be, you know, in the 70s, he was part of the punk movement in London. Like, you know, he was, you know, he was in bands. He's just a dude.
Yeah.
And, you know, his whole front, his facade is, oh, fuck all this. I don't need anything to do with this. And, you know, but, you know, he keeps doing the right thing, you know, not unlike any other superhero. You know, a great personal sacrifice, and you know, his facade is the thing that probably keeps him together. Either way, I'm reading this and I'm just thinking, I think you guys should try this book.
Okay.
I say try this issue out and tell me if you like, because the thing is, there's not a great big continuity that you have to avoid, and I think that the character really is intriguing enough that you know, there's no reason that you wouldn't like this book. Leonardo Manco has been on art duties on this book for a long time. And he's got it down. You guys will remember him. He did those Western books that we talked about on the Western show, Blaze of Glory and Apache Skies.
Yep.
It's just a good book. The other thing that's interesting about this, like a lot of those sort of case study TV series, is that the artists actually do the writers actually tend to do a pretty good job of throwing him into some pickle that you'd have a hard time seeing him get out of. And you know, you root for him and you want him to win. it's just been great since Diggle came on. There's actually a big fun action scene at the end where plane lands and they find out. You know, it's a very standard comic book, really, but it's just enough attitude and personality to set it apart that I really like it, and I have for a long time, and I don't get to talk about it enough. So,
what makes it a Vertigo book?
Well, it's pretty much the progenitor of Vertigo books,
right? But I mean, what is it about it that it sounds very non-Vertigo-y from the way you describe it?
Oh, I think it totally isn't. I mean, his attitude is very. There's a lot of those characters who have that sort of antisocial attitude that Vertigo has. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's a magic book, so it's based out of. I believe Constantine showed up originally in Alan Moore's Swamp Thing.
Yes.
And so you know, that's where a lot of the Vertigo stuff came from. It's completely adult oriented. The language is totally adult. You know, the concepts are there's a lot of sort of nihilism about humanity and people. But it does have a lot of, in Constantine lies that underlying hope, really, that you can barely see, that sort of light that shines through a little bit. I don't know how to explain how it's a Vertigo book, but to me, this is one of the quintessential Vertigo books.
It always is. Historically, I just curious. It sounds very standard.
Well, the twist on it is that you've got a magician, but it's basically about it's Merlin the magician, but nobody likes him, and he doesn't like anybody else, and he just walks around being cool with his cigarette.
Right.
I
actually have the trade. I've got the Hard Times trade.
That one's okay. That was actually the first arc that I ever read.
That's the Azzarello. That's when Azzarello wrote it.
Yep. That was the best Azzarello did on that arc. And then Mike Carey was on it for a few years. I really need to at some point go back and read a lot of the Ennis Dillon ones. I mean,
who was the first? Was it
Jamie Delano?
Yeah. That's supposed to be good too.
I have one of the arcs that Garth. I have one trade that Garth Ennis wrote, which was a lot of what the movie was based on. And you know what? The movie Keanu, say whatever you will. They actually got the attitude of everything pretty close to down.
It wasn't a bad movie.
It wasn't a bad movie, but what it didn't have was sort of the charm of him as a Brit, which is really the one missing element that I think. Really makes the book interesting. But the thing is, how I don't know why I haven't read those Ennis Preacher or Ennis Dillon books. I mean, those are the precursors to Preacher. They've got to be pretty good. So
I will say that all the talk you've had about it since Diggle's been on intrigued me. And there is a trade of Diggle's stories coming out. I think in the summer.
And I think that they would read pretty well in trade.
Yeah, so I might look at that.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, I take a look at it. I mean, I commend the consistency of the book. Any issue that, I always like it when we have picks of the week with three-digit numbers in their issues, because that means it's a book that matters, and we've often talked about it. I mean, 240 is no easy number to get to.
No, and it comes out on time and consistently every month, and it has the whole time since I've been reading comics.
It's like the Lou Gehrig of comics.
I think this is my first Vertigo book.
Yeah. Wow. So, yeah, no, I'll check it out. I'll read your issue. I'll borrow it. I'll check it out.
Good stuff.
I'm not beyond it.
Basically, this was just another really good issue. It wasn't anything that was specific about it, that other than this was totally the best book that I read cover to cover this week.
There you go. That's the pick of the week, then.
Yeah, there
you
go.
That's all you need.
That's all there is. Ron?
So
I have questions.
You've got questions? questions with X's related to them?
Yes.
Yeah? All right. So it was a big week for the X-Men. X-Men issue 207, the last chapter of the Messiah Complex crossover, and Astonish X-Men number 24, seemingly the last issue of Whedon Cassidy's run.
The last regular issue.
The last regular issue. Which one do you want to start with?
X-Men 207.
Okay. I'm honest with you?
Yeah.
Yeah, rough ending.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This Messiah Complex was very good up until about the middle. And I think the middle was a lot of filler.
Yep.
And then in the end, it was a lot of filler.
Yep. And then now, but what I thought was interesting was that this was definitely a finale.
Yeah.
Like, stuff finished.
Mm-hmm.
But I still don't really know what or why. I was left with questions. Still.
Yeah, well, that's the problem then.
Just to go over the good things about it, Wolverine often gets a lot of shit. I think over the past 15 years that he's lost his relevancy and that he never wins a fight and all this kind of stuff. And this at least had a good Wolverine, oh yeah, that's Wolverine moment when he takes it upon himself to take out the Predator X by diving into its mouth and killing him from the inside.
Yeah.
That was pretty good. Cool. That was a cool little moment. And like,
I wish she had done that about 10 weeks ago.
Yeah, I agree with you. And so we end up with a bit of a discussion standoff between Cable, Cyclops, and Professor Xavier about the baby. We still don't know who the baby is or what the relevancy is. And what I'm guessing is the
you
baby,
should.
What I'm guessing is the baby is going to be the thrust of the next several years of stories, I would imagine. Yeah. You know?
Well, I mean, it's highly indicated that it's Jean. I mean, there's a lot of hints that it's...
Yeah, oh yeah, there's tons of hints of the Jean, but there's also that it could be Rachel, too. I mean,
yeah, that's probably, true.
You know?
The baby also... Well, I'll get to that in a second. Go ahead.
Yeah. Finish it up. I would just like... I really, really liked, and did I call... the flashback to that X Factor when they took Cable away?
You did. You absolutely did.
Yep. So I'm glad.
I read that and I thought, oh, he's gonna be.
I'm gonna be floating.
Yeah.
I'm really, really pissed at what they did with Rogue.
Really? I thought people seemed to like that online.
What did they do with Rogue?
Well, what happened with Rogue was that Rogue has slowly been descending down this line of not mattering.
She's totally irrelevant in all the books I've been reading.
Yeah, totally, totally irrelevant. And what they did was they had her absorb all the minds of the people who lived on Cable's Island or whatever, so she had all these minds in her head and it just made her body shut down. And so touching the baby for some reason cured her of that, and she was herself again. And I was like, yes, okay, great, we've got Rogue back. But then she gets pissed at Mystique for doing what Mystique did and goes to kill her, but touches her before she goes to kill her, so Mystique, you know, so now Mystique's in her head.
Yeah.
She doesn't have the balls to kill her, but now she's got Mystique in her head, and it ends with her putting her hood on and going, if you care about me, Remy, don't follow me, and becoming this brooding, like, I love you, but stay away from me again. And, like, this is, like, the third, fourth time I've seen her do this to Gambit. It's, like, enough.
I wish Wolverine jumped into Gambit's mouth and killed him from the inside.
No, I like Gambit, don't get me wrong, but they had a moment, they had a clean slate with Rogue, and they
Do you think maybe they've done what they can do with her? Maybe there's a limitation to her character. Like,
well, no, I don't think there is because before all this started, they were kind of escalating her into a leadership role and all that kind of stuff, which I thought was great. Mm-hmm. But now they're just beating down the door of the burden of her powers again, which is like what they've done with her. I want to see something new, and I don't think that they've done all they can do with her.
I mean, it's a missed
opportunity. You know?
Well, sure, but maybe these aren't the people that do it. You know, for whatever reason, maybe they can't handle Rogue. You know, because. You know, her thing is, you know, she absorbs all the powers. So, like, that's the thing you keep exploring. They seem like they keep backing themselves in that same corner with it.
Yeah, but they never use her with absorbing powers. They've gone down the path of the absorbing the minds and the souls of the people, and getting way more cerebral than they need to be. When it was much cooler when she could touch somebody really quickly, have their powers for a few minutes, and then it fades.
Who did that? I mean, this sounds like a Claremont thing to me.
It might have started with Claremont, but it's definitely been whoever's been writing it over the past few years. It's been everybody. I blame Quesada.
Austin.
But so then ultimately it ends up with Cyclops relinquishing the baby to Cable in what I thought was a well. All the scenes with Cable, Professor, and Cyclops were great.
No, that was great.
Cable says Cyclops, Scott, Dad. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. They definitely addressed it, and they say, okay, Cable, take the baby in the future, make her safe. And for some reason, Bishop goes crazy and goes to shoot Cable as he's fading away, and gives Professor Xavier a headshot. and in the span of two pages, Professor Xavier is dead, and it leads to Scott saying, it's over, the dream's over, there are no X-Men.
But he's not dead, because if you look on the last page, it's X-Men Legacy, what becomes of the world's most powerful telepath after his mind has been shattered by a bullet. He's not dead, he's just in a mind-shattered state.
God, I feel like I've read that story.
And
I don't read a lot of X-Men.
Two big problems with this.
Yep.
Final issue. One, let me just say, I thought it was well written.
Yep.
I thought there was a lot of really good scenes in it. But then, overall, I keep going back and forth whether or not I really, really hated it or really didn't like or enjoyed it, because I think about different scenes and I like that. But then overall, there was about six different storylines or threads going through this story, and almost none of them were resolved. But now we've got six X-Men books to buy.
Yep.
If we want to know about what happened to Jamie and Lila in the future, we got to buy X-Factor. If we want to know what happened to the baby, we got to buy Cable.
Yep.
And if we want to know what happens with Mystique, that's X-Force, right? No, that's Wolverine. And then
Fooled
we got
you.
You know, it's like,
And then we got Young X-Men to see what
happens. Purifiers are going to buy X-Force, and and it's just like, it felt very, very cheap, you know? Yeah.
Well, that's how I felt at the end of 52.
The other big problem was the art was just horrendous in this issue.
Well, Bacala. Yeah, Bacala.
I mean, no, but it was worse than normal Bacala.
Yeah, it was really bad, yeah.
I mean, there was some pages where some things I couldn't follow. I literally couldn't. When Predator X, I think, bit Bishop.
Yeah.
I couldn't. It took me 10 minutes to figure out what had happened in that panel.
Well, I mean, I think what sums it up is the Finch cover.
Yeah.
Where you've got Mystique holding a gun to Warpath's head.
A six shooter.
Yeah. Then you've got Wolverine slashing Bishop, and you've got Cyclops shooting something, and you've got Emma Frost looking at Gambit, and you've got Cable and the baby, and you've got X-23 fighting the green chick, and you got Nightcrawler kicking Iceman. Like it's just completely chaotic. And I think that, and like the thing, and while I'm reading this, for some reason this crossover really has me wanting to dig up Extinction Agenda, which is my all time favorite X-Men crossover, because I thought for a moment while I was reading this book, I'm like, you know, this is why people complain about the X-Men, that there are too many characters, there's too much stuff going on. But in Extinction Agenda, there was still a ton of characters, but it was only, I think, 9 issues, and it was very, there were like maybe an A plot and like a B and C plot, and that was it. Like it's you got to be precise with what you're doing with this stuff. Don't get me wrong, I'm going to keep reading it and read everything, of course, because I want to see it through. I think this is better than a lot of the shit that we've read in the past 8 years.
No, it was still overall, I think, positive, but there was a lot of negatives. And the crazy thing is, like, obviously I buy X Factor. I'm looking at this last page where it shows all the books that you've got to follow for X-Men Divided We Stand, and I'm going
to
probably stay at Uncanny because I thought Brubaker's issues were really strong.
Yeah.
I want no part of Cable or X-Force. The art for Young X-Men looks really good.
Yeah.
I don't know who that is. I can't tell from the small picture.
Yeah, it's a pencil, but it does look really good, yeah.
And X-Men Legacy looks like it's a flashback to the original X-Men, which I love.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
So I might buy that, too. So at the end of the day, they're going to win their battle because I'm going to end up buying more X-Men books than I did previous to the Messiah Complex. Yeah.
Well, that's the
And as much as I'd say it, I think the casualty is going to be X-Factor.
No, come on.
No, I'll keep reading it, but I don't think X-Factor is going to be the same X-Factor that we've loved up to this
point. Oh, you mean it's going to be changed? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that's just me.
Peter David was so happy about that when we did that show a year ago.
I know. Well, that was a long time ago, Josh. But okay, wait, all right. Astonishing, though. Astonishing!
What?
What does that mean?
Astonishing was fucking great again.
I felt like this suffered a little from the quality syndrome.
Oh, really?
I mean, the last issue was actually so good.
Yep.
That this one.
Oh, you got to tell me the last page was the last three pages didn't have you. Strong finish.
No, it was a totally strong finish. I did suffer a little bit in this from not knowing who the hell anyone was or what anything really meant anymore.
I will gladly admit, and I admitted it. I read this issue in the comic book store on Wednesday. Like, I sat down and I read it, and then I was talking to somebody there. The page with Colossus in the center of the thing, and when he's like, "I'm not great thinker, but I believe I understand this now." That whole page, I don't get it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand. Anybody with a green face from that planet, I have no idea who they are and what their motivations are.
I agree.
You know what I think the problem with this is that you go into it thinking it's the final issue.
Yes, and that's what killed me,
And it didn't, you know, there's still the Giant Size special to go, so I was expecting different. And it was really good. The one undeniable thing was reading this right after X-Men was the art,
Yeah.
Going from Bachelor to this was just like...
Well, you know, it's a very complex plot.
Yeah, it is.
And coming out every 6 weeks, you know, it's a little hard to follow, I think. And that, you know, take that as you will. I do think the things that were great about it is that these are the best characterizations of these characters I've read anywhere.
Yeah, Wolverine has some great
Wolverine
lines.
Wolverine in this book Cyclops. Is exactly what Wolverine needs to be. Same with Cyclops.
When does Pete get to throw me at something? That was great.
Yeah.
That was a great line.
Wolverine is he's the spice in this book.
Yep.
He spices up things, but he's not overused.
Cyclops is fucking awesome.
Which is what Bendis is learning to do in New Avengers with him. Although in that he's a little more of an elder statesman kind of thing, I guess. He does that in here a little, but you know.
Look at the giant-sized pinup in the back. It's got the Fantastic Four. It's got the Avengers.
Oh, yeah, I've been looking at that for a few weeks now. That's a beautiful poster. It's, like, awesome. It looks like the whole Marvel Universe gets pulled into it. Spider-Man, like, I can't wait to see Cassidy draw these people.
I've decided that the Beast's girdle really freaks me out, though.
Yeah, I've never liked it.
It's awful.
Yeah.
It's a bustier with the boobs out.
That's the one thing I wish they'd undo from the Morrison run is
East, yeah.
devolve him back a little bit.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, it's just good with that. It was good. I there was not really a lot that I felt that was sticking out about. Great cover.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it did suffer a little from
both covers are great. Did you see both the covers?
No, I have the Cyclops face.
Yeah, I bought the Cyclops, but the variant was the two color, you know, character set and the one of Kitty. It's a Kitty and Lockheed.
That's what I've got. It's a good one.
I actually bought two copies.
I did not see that.
One of each.
Boy, the Marvel train keeps rolling.
It does.
And it's not stopping anytime soon.
So it's safe to say that Ultimates 3, issue number 1, was a disaster because of the coloring.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So as soon as issue 2 hit the stands, I ran to it to see if they still fucked it up. And I think it's better, but
it's a little better.
It's still dark, and it's still not good.
No.
This would be the last issue of this I'm reading. This was...
I actually really liked it.
Oh, my God. I thought this was the biggest collection of comic book cliches and bad dialogue I've ever read in a long time. I really thought it
was fun.
You are different than me.
I thought it was nice to read an Avengers story that's not bogged down in everything, and I am enjoying the new Avengers and the Mighty Avengers, and I'm looking forward to Secret Invasion, but it's nice to read a tale that it's not. I don't have to read three other books for it. I can just enjoy the story.
I just thought like he was just doing like caricatures of the, you know, like the Spider-Man was just kind of silly, and Sabretooth said suck it. What is that? It was just... There was a lot of lines.
There was something that Spider-Man said that was so, I mean, I don't want to knock on Jeff Loeb's age or something like that, but it was like, and like one of our parents read in comics. I forgot what it was though. Where was it?
I felt that the whole time that I was reading that.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you shot me, you screwball. I'm sorry, Peter doesn't say you shot me, you screwball.
The Ultimate One might. He talks.
No, Ultimate Spider-Man does not say screwball. He would say something else.
I can see him saying screwball. Bendis writes his dialogue a little bit like that.
Yeah.
He says weird things that normal teenagers
like a 40-year-old funny Jewish guy as opposed to a 16-year-old.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, I'm with Connor. I didn't hate the story. You know, I'm not in love with it. I'm curious, you know? I mean,
I like Thor in this. That's about all that I liked.
Ooh, yeah, you always like Thor.
I like reading a story that's got the Avengers, it's got Thor, it's got Iron Man, it's got Captain America. You don't get that
anywhere else. I just feel as if we just read this, the Ultimates get a coordinated attack on that story within the last volume.
And then,
I didn't read the last volume.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't either.
That's what it was, is that they got attacked on all fronts, you know. That was crazy.
The thing that really left me with a bad taste in my mouth, though, was flip the last page, oh, it's Wolverine.
Yeah.
I was just seriously, this is supposed to excite me at this point. How many times in my life have I seen this, you know? I just, meh.
Yeah. Meh. Right. So
I wish the color was better. I mean, I feel like the art would be good if it had regular flat coloring, but...
I thought the art was better than last time.
Yeah, although it was still...
It's still not colored correctly.
It didn't look like shit smeared across the paper.
Jeez.
That's what it looked like, that first issue. It was all brown and shitty.
I don't think that I like Matarera's work. Matarera. I can see why people do. It's just totally not for me.
I like it. I've always liked it.
Meh.
All right. Cool. Moving on. So how psyched were you guys to see Young Avengers Presents Patriot written by Ed Brubaker?
I was very much. More so when I learned that Bucky was actually in it, just because I like when he writes that. That being said...
Did it pay off for you?
No, I was actually kind of disappointed in this. This is sort of the first time for me that Brubaker's missed the mark. He didn't miss it wildly, and I liked what he was doing, but there was something that didn't feel right about it to me.
I'm going to go out on a limb, and I agree with you. I was a little disappointed by this. Despite Alan Heinberg not caring about us, I loved... I'm still bitter about that. I loved Young Avengers a lot. Of all the Young Avengers, I disliked the character Patriot the most.
And you hate America, though.
I hate America. Yeah, exactly. And I don't know if I don't know if I blame Brubaker for this being disappointment or blame the character, because the character is just so, I don't know, it just seemed boring to me. So.
I mean, I understand what he was trying to do, but it felt a little shoehorned, I guess. It was like, I don't know. And because the thing is, because it felt to me like the writer, you know, it was he never really convinced himself or thereby patriot. Like, he, like the whole time he's like, yeah, but it still kind of sucks. And I never felt like at the end there was that stirring moment. And what it did make me do is it made me miss Steve Rogers.
Yeah.
Because the Steve Rogers character actually has the gravitas to pull off the thing that Bucky didn't quite do. And I think that they knew that writing Bucky, but because of it, it suffered.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought he pulled it off. I thought the last scene was great. I thought the stuff that was in the beginning that was more shoehorned in. I thought, but if there's anybody that's got gravitas, it's Bucky. He was there too. I mean, mm-hmm. he's a World War II veteran. I think the worst part of this was Paco Medina's art was wildly uneven, and I thought his sort of boy band haircut that he gave to Bucky was awful.
Yeah, I did think that the art of Bucky, I just kept thinking he was like Nightwing.
Yeah, he didn't look like Bucky, and there was a couple of shots of Patriot where he looked like just sort of miniaturized. You know, the legs were too short and stubby, and it was just like it was. Mm-hmm. You know, some people can't draw teenagers; they don't know how to draw them.
Yeah,
they draw them as the limbs are all wrong length, or they're all just miniaturized people, and it just doesn't look right. And he didn't; it just looked off.
I would have liked to see more scenes with the grandfather. I mean, I don't know if he's completely lost his mind or what, because I've never read Young Avengers. I mean to. I just never got around to it.
It was so good.
I'm sure, but like that was the part where I was like, okay, this could be interesting, because like I would love to hear flashback tale of this, you know, whatever. But I don't know. It just wasn't quite there.
You can go read The Truth.
You know, it wasn't even bad.
Yeah, no.
You know, it wasn't bad. It's just like compared to I'm reading through the Cap Omnibus right now. And it's not that.
Yeah.
No, I think this is like a, if I can use a home baseball metaphor, it's like a solid, you know, like, double.
No, it's a single.
Yeah.
No, I disagree. I thought the ending was really strong. It was very stirring.
It's a close double then.
Connor
slid
wanted
in,
to like his
books. Under the tag.
You wanted to like your books more than we did this week, I think.
it's like a Jose Reyes double.
I've always, for all my entire comic reading life, I've connected to Captain America's Bucky, and I thought the ending was very stirring.
Okay.
And the last scene was Bucky and Patriot was great.
All right, fair enough. Well, it's your prerogative then.
You can do what you want to do.
Josh, you really need to read Young Avengers, though.
No, I know, and it's Jimmy Chung, and it's, you know.
You should go pick it up.
Yeah, well.
Where would you do that if you could?
Well, I would probably go to a comic shop. I live in New York City, so I guess. Oh, my God, I would totally go to Jim Hanley's Universe, because it's one of America's best and most progressive comic book stores. They've got all sorts of stuff like that. Like, they have every superhero thing and every indie thing and every other thing in between. They have statues, action figures, and books galore. I just made that up. And when I didn't live in New York City, I always made sure to go there when I got here, because it's where art and literature meet. It's just south of the Empire State Building on 33rd in Midtown Manhattan between 5th and 6th, or you could go to Staten Island to 325 Newdorp Lane. It's very likely to be the very best thing on that island. And if you go there, tell them that I Fanboy sent you. We'd very much appreciate it if you do that. You can friend them at MySpace. .com/JimHanley'sUniverse, or you can go to jhuniverse.com because that's where art and literature meet. So there.
Excellent. I love Dan Dare.
You want to marry
him? I love the book. I love the book. I love the character.
Did you get what cover? Did you get? Did you get the Brendan McCarthy cover? It's so good.
Yes, I got the Brendan McCarthy cover.
Oh,
which
okay,
one's
sorry,
that?
That's the colorful one, the pop arty one.
I got the alien one.
You got the pop art one. I just love his sort of Britishness, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He's very like old British soldier guy.
In a different way than John Constantine.
I imagine.
Yes.
This actually reminded me a lot of Starship Troopers.
Yep.
It actually reminded me of Zulu.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever seen Zulu?
No.
It's about colonization. I mean, it's you have to look at it without, you got to not look at it in a present context. It was colonization of Africa by the British, and the British outpost being attacked by Zulus, and they do very much the dialogue is similar. You know, two rows of soldiers, mm-hmm. reload fire, form squares. It was very much like that. So, I just love that. I love the guy. My only concern with this book is issue 3, and we're still sort of meandering on this side plot.
But there's just great character moments in there. I'm upset this isn't an ongoing, quite honestly.
Oh, I'm totally. I mean, this is, if this is an ongoing, this would be one of my favorites.
Yep. Yeah, great stuff with the woman in the government office. Great stuff with when the officers tried to get on the ship and he dressed them down. Just great issue.
Good.
Take off uniforms. You're done.
That's fine. We accept.
Teen Titans 55, very quickly, I thought. This is the first issue where I felt like Sean McKeever really has a strong handle on what the Titans are supposed to be about. The classic Titan stories were always 60% interpersonal relationships, 40% action, mostly about teenagers and living together and people interdating and their feelings and stuff, and this is what this was. I thought this was might have been the strongest Sean McKeever issue yet, the best Teen Titans I've read in a while.
That's opposite of what I've been reading on the web about that book.
Well, that's because people, I don't know what they're talking about. And I thought, I love Jamal Igel's work. He used to draw Nightwing, and I love him here. It's big, clean, beautiful, bright art. And I'm really excited for Titans again. So there's that.
Cool. The Order number 7 came out this week, hot on the heels of the April solicitations coming out, revealing that the Order number 10 is the last issue of the series. After reading this issue, fucking Marvel, drop the ball, let this breathe. When this came out, I was really excited for it. I thought it was really good. Barry Kitson's art, Matt Fraction's writing it. It's been getting its legs a little, but this single issue might be looked back as the moment that Matt Fraction kind of said, I belong here. The stuff in Iron Fist has been good, but who knows how much he's doing versus Brubaker and all that kind of stuff. I haven't been reading Punisher War Journal, admittedly, but this issue, single issue, Namor and the Atlanteans attack San Francisco, and he surrenders himself to the Order, and it's an amazing single issue of the action going in San Francisco. What he did was Namor did was had a big tidal wave start up around San Francisco and just stop. And so like if it crashed down, it would destroy the city, but he could rescind it back. And he turns himself into the order's leader, and they have this amazing cerebral conversation. And the writing was just amazing. Kitson's art, like every four or five pages, there was a similarly laid out page that had Namor and the leader guy from the Order talking, and in the lower bottom eighth of the page, and the rest of the page was a huge two-page splash of a moment of Namor's history, going back to Human Torch, going back to the Invaders, going back to Fantastic Four. It was just like, if you're a Namor fan, and I know you're out there, you've got to pick up this issue.
all seven of them?
Yeah, and you've got to pick up this issue. And
you're going to get email about that.
Yeah, and folks, if you are fans of like Avengers-type Marvel kind of team, that sort of thing, the Order has been really, really good, and not enough people have been talking about it. Because of that, it got canceled, and I'm telling them they're making a mistake.
Well, I think probably more because it doesn't sell anything.
Well, yeah,
blame the fans. Blame me, I don't buy it.
Yeah, exactly. So
didn't you pick the first issue?
I did pick the first issue, yeah. And I'm glad to see with this issue that the potential I saw in it came through, and so much like similar to Hellblazer, like Josh, I'll lend you this issue just to read it because it's really, really good.
You got it.
So, cool.
I really wanted to sort of put the other side on this little sandwich with a little nonconformist book. Usagi Yojimbo number 109 from Dark Horse Comics was out this week, and this was sort of the conclusion of a story that's been going on for a little while. Basically, a woman who was Usagi's friend gets possessed by a demon, and there's a whole mess of bounty hunters out to get her. And at the end of the last issue, the four good bounty hunters are surrounded by, like, tens of other bounty hunters, and there's going to be a big showdown. So in this one, there was that showdown and a big fight and sort of a bittersweet ending. And it's just a really fun book, and the longer I read it, the more I appreciate each issue. Another one that's really pretty easy to jump onto, I wouldn't do it with this issue, but maybe with the next one if you were thinking about it, it's one that you really learn to appreciate. It seems much more simple than it is, but this was a great end to a story.
This was a rabbit.
That was, yeah. Well, you lose that. It's not unlike in Mouse, where the animals are used to sort of show you the character's personality.
Right.
Once you get over it, it's not like cute fuzzy animal jokes or anything. It's just like it's a quicker way to tell you who somebody is. The rhino guy is kind of brusque, and the dog is impulsive
and has fleas.
Ah.
All right, cool.
So, I always think of him being part of the Turtles. That's just what.
Yeah, but is it so not?
I mean, stuck in my head forever because that's how they were associated.
I know, but what Stan Sakai has done with it does deserve, you know, respect and the credit. It's pretty cool.
It's a really good book. I really like it.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, it was an okay week. I had a good time with the comics. But if you want to have a good time with the comics and you're having a hard time managing your subscriptions and that sort of thing, you should check out FooComics.com. It's a new website that's made for comic book stores to allow their customers to control over their subscriptions and pull lists. Stores can manage their customers and make sure everybody gets the comics they want. It's all online. It's all free. It was designed by a comic collector, so he's doing it in terms of what they'd want out of their store experience. So if you want something like that, go to foocomics.com/ifanboy or tell your store to check it out. Super cool, and it helps you make sure you get your comics when you want them. So foocomics.com/ifanboy.
Excellent. It was viewer mail time again, as always, or almost always. The first letter is from Travis from Kansas City, Missouri. He says, I've been listening to the podcast for about 4 months and have watched all the video podcasts and really enjoyed both. Thank you. I just wanted to get your opinion on what comic convention would be the best to attend. I think that I would prefer to attend one of the smaller conventions, unlike San Diego, where it's just mass chaos. I'd like to go to one where you actually have a chance to see the guest artists and writers without standing in line all day and missing out on the rest of the fun. Thank you for your time.
Right. Thank you for your time.
Well, Travis is in Kansas City, so I don't know what his travel budget looks like. But I know it's kind of short notice, but if you go to one of my favorite conventions, WonderCon in San Francisco, it's coming up at the end of February, February 22nd-ish that weekend. WonderCon, Connor, you went last year, right?
Yes.
WonderCon is very, it's small, intimate.
Oh, it's very, yeah. Very, yeah. It's sort of a hybrid between the small sort of regional conventions and San Diego in that there's a lot of big-name guests. A lot of people go to it, but it's also very the people are very approachable because there's not a ton of people there.
Yeah, totally.
Yes, at it.
And the panels are easy to get into, and it's all in a good time. They're going to be premiering New Frontier, the movie there. It's going to be awesome. It's put on by the same people who do the San Diego Con, so it still has that same feel.
Heroes Con.
Yeah, yep. Heroes Con is in the other direction, right?
Well, but it's also similar
geographically.
Right, but that's in North Carolina, Charlotte, North Carolina, so maybe that's sort of easier to get to. But it's similar in the layout and the size of San Francisco, but so the people there, it's very approachable. I mean,
Heroes Con is one of the gems of the con circuit of the people who do it. They've got the right feeling, they got the right heart going into it, and it's everybody's there for the same reason and very approachable. You can hang out with everybody and that sort of thing. So
I thought this would be a good time though to mention the iFanboy convention schedule for 2008.
Yes, I agree.
So if you are going to any conventions this year, and want to know where you'll find us, usually complaining about our feet. We will be at WonderCon San Francisco in February, right?
Confirmed. Yes. Confirmed.
And then where are we going?
We are confirmed for New York. New York in April.
New York Con in April.
Yep.
We are going to probably be at Emerald City Con in Seattle in May.
Yep.
And then jumping to San Diego in July.
Correct.
That's probably it for us.
That's probably it. I personally really want to go to Heroes Con again, but it's going to come down to timing and wallet and money and all stuff like that. Emerald City Con is one in Seattle that's been getting a lot of good a lot of people. Last year apparently was really good, and a lot of good people are going to it, or a lot of pros are attending it this year, so we're going to check that out this year, try something new. But those are the ones we're locked in on going to.
Let me just say, on the other hand, you do have to go to San Diego at some point. I mean, there's the other. I mean, but the thing is, it is overwhelming, but it's overwhelming in a good way. Whereas that sort of mass chaos, like, I wouldn't recommend the New York Con. It was really kind of like claustrophobic in that way. But San Diego is just so overblown. It's like Las Vegas.
I'm hopeful for New York this year because last year New York in February in the cold just hurt it so much. The fact that it's in April now, I'm curious to see how that affects the mood.
Sure.
You know. So
next,
it was too much.
Yeah, in too small a space. It was just like New York. Caroline from Virginia writes in, and she's writing a different Spider-Man question than what we've probably been floored with lately, and that's true. Could you recommend what you think are the best, most essential, most iconic storylines for the regular Marvel Universe?
616. The email says 616.
That's not what I said.
This is why you don't read emails. She wants us to recommend what we think are the best, most essential, most iconic storylines for 616 Spider-Man.
So she's gathered that none of us were fans of Straczynski's run, and she's hearing a lot of talk about how great the book used to be, and she says there must be more people like her who don't know what the great runs for Spider-Man are. So basically, she's read Loeb and Sale's Spider-Man Blue, read through the first Omnibus, and where do you go from there, basically, is the question. She's heard about Ultimate, but she just wants to know about the regular Marvel Universe Spider-Man.
Fucking 616.
No.
Okay, Caroline, what are you going to – anything from that Omnibus, Amazing Fantasy number 15 – up until a little after Gwen Stacy dies, is pure gold. An entire decade of comics of Stan Lee, Steve Ditko, John Romita Sr., like all these amazing creators on it, just total gold. Total gold.
And I think that when you go a little more modern, the one story that stuck out to me was the Kraven's Last Hunt.
I was going to say that as well, yeah.
That would be the next one. And then maybe the McFarlane stuff, but I don't remember if it was actually good or not, but I think it was.
I would use the
amazing
introduction of Venom.
Amazing.
The introduction of Venom.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting is for the show, I looked online to find trade paperbacks. She asked for where they're collected, and surprisingly, Marvel's very good with their trade program. They get things collected, but not the old stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and there isn't really a lot of Spider-Man trades from the pre- marriage days, or even the early marriage days.
Well, because I think that because I think they're in a position of transitioning, and they're going to start rolling them out in the bigger formats.
Well, so but for now, if you really, really, really wanted to find them, from what I see, the only thing really available are beyond the omnibus are the essentials. There's a lot of Spider-Man essentials.
There's also the DVD.
I was just going to say the DVD. Yeah, yep.
Which is being phased out. So
right, but so you can still get them on eBay.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you really, if you don't mind the black and white art, then pick up the Spider-Man Essentials. There's like, I saw 7 or 8. There could be more volumes of that. So, I'm a big fan of the 80s period Spider-Man. I mean, I remember those when I look back at my Spider-Man stories. Those ones that I remember, the 80s, early 90s stuff. Mm-hmm.
So if you have questions like that, you can email them to contact@ifanboy.com.
Yes. Netflix has over 75,000 titles with no late fees, and they're free shipping both ways. Fast delivery with plans starting as low as $4.99 a month. There's a 2-week free trial if you go to www.netflix.com/ifanboy, and we all love it.
Hmm. Lovely. All right, on to the voicemail. Our voicemail comes...
what is the voiced one, boss?
with a very simple question.
Hey guys, this is Nate from Canton, Ohio. Just calling to ask a really simple question. Why does the new Justice League of America suck so much? That's it. Thanks, bye.
I think I wouldn't use suck so much as unfocused. I thought the Meltzer stuff came close to suck. But I think the current stuff is unfocused. I have a feeling they know what to do with the book right now. And if you read Dwayne McDuffie, who's the writer's comments on certain message boards, you'll see that he gets a lot of direction from above, things he's got to put into stories. So he's not even really writing it. It's sort of the brass is writing it. And
he's coordinating
sort of,
it.
He's sort of dialoguing it. So I think that's part of the problem. Whenever you have that situation, then there's always going to be a problem from a storytelling standpoint.
Well, I have to say with JLA is that I felt a wash of excitement around the title when the Meltzer run ended, and it has been a disappointment since then.
Well, it's funny because so many of the big name DC properties right now are just meandering.
I can see the tendrils of corporate meddling in those books. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You can just see them because there's no creator focus in them. Every issue is a different promotional issue.
Do you think that does it have a lot to do with the sort of bigger events going on in DC that book can't take its rightful place at the top of the DC food chain?
It could be that they have to be in a holding pattern until the final crisis shakes up.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe that's it. I just, it's it's too bad that you've got books like Green Arrow and Green Lantern, and very focused by the writer, very much controlled by the writer, with a clear vision for the story and the characters. And then you've got like Justice League and Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman. Well, Superman's actually starting to come around because Geoff Johns is on it now. But who's, you know, they're just all over the map.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. They're not focused.
I think they need to put Geoff Johns on this book.
They didn't put him on all the books. Yes, he said he would love to write Justice League.
That would be awesome. That'd be really good.
His main wish is to write Aquaman.
I'll take it. Shit. This next email is my favorite voicemail ever.
Hey guys, how's it going? This is Dave calling you from Denver. Actually, in a bar right now. Got a bit of a dilemma for you. I was hoping you guys could help me out with. Been dating a girl for about a month now. Things are going pretty well. And she doesn't know that I'm a comic geek. And I'm not sure how to, like, break the news. Hey, how's it going? So, I don't know, man. I don't think she's geek-friendly, so to speak. So it's like, somehow I got to break the news that I'm a total fucking comic fanatic. I don't know. Maybe you guys can discuss this later. I gotta go back there because she's sitting alone. Talk to you later.
Man, at first I thought that he was full of shit because it was like silent, and then for some reason at the end he turns up the ambient music. I'm like, oh my god, there's a dude who really called us from a bar.
What, he called us from a bar, but he left her at her table. Like, he's like, I'm gonna go to the bathroom, and he ran and called us.
Like it came up in conversation. She was like, what are you into? And he's like, I gotta call my fanboy.
I gotta go to the bathroom. I gotta be right back.
And he wasn't gonna get an answer. It's a voicemail line.
I know. I wanna know how the rest of the date went, Dave. Come on.
Oh my god.
Do we have to do a relationship show part two?
We might have to. Dave, go watch our video show about the relationship. What episode number was that? Like 12, something? 13? 14?
It was in May.
We did a video show about relationships. You don't hide your comics from her. Own them. Be proud.
Yeah, and
she
you can't.
If she doesn't like you because you read comics, she's not going to like you for other things. So, you know what I mean?
And if you hold on to it for too long, she's going to think you were hiding it when it didn't matter before, and she's going to, well, why was he hiding it?
Right. Don't be ashamed. Be proud.
There's also nothing better than confidence. So if you're confident about it, then she'll respond to that.
You should totally get a Batman tattoo. Or not.
So, if we did another relationship show, it would be like Josh and his wife and Ron's girlfriend, and then it would be like me and the girl I met at a bar last night.
Hey, how's it going?
And she's still drunk.
Her hair's like disheveled.
She has a sock stuck to her shirt. What the?
It's the next day. She's looking around. She's like, why are all these lights on?
Because we didn't tell her. We just set the stuff up and then woke her up.
No, your name is Lisa, not, right? Lisa? Yeah, okay.
No, baby, it's Laura.
Not first. Oh, shoot. Sorry.
God, all right. Our next voicemail isn't nearly as good.
Oh, that's awful.
Hey, fanboys. This is Brad from Kentucky. I just recently got back into comics a little over a year ago, and I already emailed you guys about getting back into X-Men. And thanks for all the recommendations. Anyways, a guy at the comic book store was talking to me because I ordered Speak of the Devil, the new series by Gilbert Hernandez, the 6-issue miniseries. And I was just wondering about Love and Rockets. I don't really know much about it other than what I've read on Wikipedia, and I just want to know what's a good place to start. Should I just start reading the volumes 1 through whatever, or should I check out the Jamie's Hobbit's 13 stories? Any kind of help with this would be great. See ya.
Love and Rockets. We're going to fight over this one, aren't we?
Yeah.
And in this corner.
One of those seminal works.
Now, before we get into our personal opinions, Love and Rockets by the brothers Hernandez, Jamie and or Jaime and Gilbert Hernandez, and every now and then Mario, I think, or the third brother or something. They've been, churning out independent comics since the early 80s.
Yep.
Black and white. They're known for their very kind of clear kind of lines, you know, like very, you know, the art, I don't want to say simple, but the art is very clean.
Yep.
Regardless of our personal opinions, they are considered one of the great pieces of comic work in the modern day, and that kind of thing. A lot they're heralded as great creators.
Legendary in their indie legends.
I would say it is to indie comics what like The Watchmen is to Yes. Well, modern indie comics, what the Watch is to modern superhero comics.
Yeah, I mean, Love and Rockets, Cerebus, like we're talking those, this kind of pantheon of fantastic indie comics. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that said.
They recently, last year, they put out some big, compilations.
What Fantagraphics has been doing is Fantagraphics has been collecting all of the Love and Rockets work all the way back to the beginning into beautiful trade paperback editions.
Yeah, they are. They're nice.
Yeah, packaged. Well-designed, well-produced, well, all that kind of stuff, with the complete all the work. I would say if you're curious about it, pick up the first volume.
Well, they're not really numbered, are they? I mean, they're storyline.
I'm pretty sure they're numbered.
I don't think they're not. They're by storyline. They're just they're self-contained. Yeah. I picked up Maggie the Mechanic,
which is the first one.
Yeah, they're always been around for me. So I always see the single issues at comic stores or bookstores or wherever, and you always hear the name, and I always assumed it was an indie, straight up indie, people's tale, and. I was shocked to find that it's actually the Maggie Mechanic book is very sci-fi.
Yep.
I didn't finish it. I stopped reading about halfway through. It was a struggle. I mean, the craft is there. The art's beautiful. I mean, the writing seemed fine. It just wasn't what I was looking for. I wasn't into it.
The thing is that the stuff that Jaime and the stuff that Gilbert do tend to be very different. There's a little bit of sci-fi. There's a lot of sexuality. There's a lot of kind of over the top, not stories, but over the top kind of illustrations and all that kind of stuff. I for one love everything they've done. I mean, I started reading Love and Rockets, and it was one of the first kind of indie comics that I picked up because actually, ironically, from the band that stole the name. And it was just, I don't know, it just, yeah, you're right, it gets weird, but I like it. So I couldn't even tell you why, so.
I just, it wasn't what I was expecting. I was hoping, we always talk about wanting the next big indie personal tale, and I was hoping for a great, seminal indie personal tale, and I got, dinosaurs and
Let me go through the trades that have come out since then, Connor, because there's got to be one in there that I think that is not as sci-fi and not as weird that you.
I love sci-fi. I didn't respond to any of it.
Yeah, I think maybe Palomar you might like a little better. We'll work on this. But Love and Rockets, definitely just check it out.
I've never read any of it.
Yeah,
Let me read yours, Connor. Let me take a shot at it, so I know something. Because
geez, were we passing the books around this week? Jeez.
Yeah, if you wanted to call and leave a voicemail, if you have an opinion of Love and Rockets or anything, you can call 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 1-888-326-2697. But if you wanted to check out Love and Rockets, Connor, where could you go?
Yeah, suddenly you decided, hey, I'm interested. I've heard the name. I'll go to ifanboy.com/store. And I will go to Amazon through there, and I will look out for Love and Rockets, and I'll pick it up there. Or I'll go there and check out what we've been talking about in the video show, or our own personal picks, which we should probably change, because we've talked about that every week, and we still haven't done it. But ifanboy.com/store.
Yeah. And then if you're at ifanboy.com, after you've completed your purchases, check out some of the stuff we got going on there. There's lots of good conversation. There's posts. We got stuff going up all the time. Links to the forums over at Revision 3 and just tons of good stuff there.
Indeed. And we've also got a lovely video show, a video podcast that you might have checked out. It comes out every Saturday on both on ifanboy.com as well as revision3.com/ifanboy. Yesterday we had an episode come out about Sandman.
If you didn't love that episode, you have no heart.
If you haven't watched it, stop what you're doing, go look at it. At least watch the first 5 minutes, trust us.
Oh, it's a great show. I'm willing to go out. This is a great show. I liked this show a lot.
And next week we're actually looking at Kingdom Come.
Horrible show. It was the worst one we've ever done.
So check out the video show every Saturday.
Yep, and if you want an iFanboy t-shirt, you can go to jinx.com/iFanboy. You can get one there. It's got iFanboy in the front, intern on the back. If you get one, send a picture of yourself wearing the shirt to jinx.com, and they'll give you free stickers. Send it to us. We won't send you anything for free, but we will appreciate it.
Drilling this into your head works because somebody called us from a bar. 888-FANBOYS, 326-2697, or if you want to write us an email from your iPhone when you're at the bar, contact@ifanboy.com.
The drilling in is so deep that somebody actually called us and left a message for Around Comics.
Which I think is just, and we've gotten them for Scott Hines before too.
Yeah, we have that. So also to drill in your head, if you want to be our friend on the internet and you're part of the whole little social networking phenomenon, you go to myspace.com or ComicSpace or Verb or Twitter and throw /iFanboy on there and be our friend. Or you go to Facebook, search for iFanboy. You can be a fan of us or join the iFanboy group at Facebook.
And if you'd like the show, you can leave a review at iTunes for this show and for the video show. We appreciate the feedback. And better yet, you can tell your friends about the show. Tell your comic book store owner, your mom, your dad, or the person who does the school crossing guards. They might need to listen to something while they direct traffic.
Give us money at ifanboy.com/donations, please. They help us make the show and the website.
We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, then. I feel satisfied because, like, I have no comics to read right now.
You don't?
Well, no. Like, normally, you know, there's the rush to read the book on Wednesday. You know, then I normally – sometimes I go back and I reread stuff. But I actually had time this week, and I read them all, and now I can relax.
Well, so. Isn't your life awesome?
It is. True. Awesome.
I've still got the trade paperback stack of Doom.
Oh, yeah. And no, I have that, too.
That
yeah.
never goes anywhere. Ever.
All right. Well, until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
And I've got reading to do, apparently. I didn't know. Or I'm Josh. That works, too.
Goodbye.
Bye.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, like, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.